smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
There is no shortage of dog training methods, never has been. But today it seems dog owners can't escape the advice of a range of so-called experts who are promoting, in some cases, conflicting advice. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Good Dog Podcast, where today's focus is on communicating with dogs as the fundamental component of training them. My guests are experts in this, Brad and Tamara Jaffe of Team Canine in the Phoenix, Arizona area. Welcome, Brad and Tamara.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Tamara, let's start with you. Why do you feel it's important to understand how dogs think?
It's important to understand when you're communicating to, you have a creature who can't communicate with a human, so it's our being more complex of a species to learn how to communicate with the animal. And each animal has their own unique system of communications. So working with dogs is looking at body language, seeing how they respond to certain things. And a lot of times dogs aren't being defiant or manipulative. A lot of times they're just confused. So if people understood what the dog was truly saying, they could get a lot further and have a much more harmonious relationship with their pet.
So before we understand how a dog communicates, we really have to take a look at how they think. What are the things that motivate them, right?
Right. How they process things is very different than another creature would process.
So are things pretty simple? Dogs want to play. They want to be loved. They want to be walked. They want to be fed. They like the way things smell. Is it pretty simple?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's certain resources. There's food, freedom, and attention.
Okay.
You know, things that help them survive and enjoy life.
And they want to please us, right? I think this is what's so frustrating for dog owners is that they know dogs want to get that approval. They want to please their owner or master, and yet they get into patterns of behavior where you just can't seem to control them.
Right. A lot of that I tend to see as being human error, and unfortunately our behaviors create responses even though it's unaware to us. We've helped encourage this response.
So what's an example of that?
Well, jumping up, for example, people want their dogs the dog is excited. You've been gone all day and his human is coming home. Life is great. You walk in the door and the dog is so excited at this point. So it's hard to inhibit. And what do? We talk high pitch. We get all excited and then they jump on us because they have no inhibition. Instead of helping. And so basically we just set the dog up for failure and now we're yelling at him. Down, off, and we're angry. What I would tend to do is if I came in and my dog was really excited to set him up to succeed, I might talk really soft. So I kind of put an energy ceiling out there. The dog can't surpass that ceiling. So I might talk to him, but I might not touch him. If I feel like the dog's on the verge of jumping up, I might disengage with him and avert my eyes in another direction. That's going to bring him down. Does that make sense?
And you have to be consistent. It absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, consistency is really important in the proper behavior. So if your behavior is appropriate with consistency, you will get the results you're looking for.
Brad, what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that some trainers make when attempting to modify a dog's behavior?
Well, I think even in your question is there as far as trying to modify the dog's behavior. Most of the time, we need to modify the human's behavior, not the dog's behavior.
Point well taken.
Yeah, and what happens, and that's the biggest mistake that all of us make, trainer or just average, you know, dog owner, is that we want to fix the dog. Or a lot of people want their dog fixed, so they'll send them to a trainer, and a trainer will say, I can fix your dog for you. Well, they're not computers. You can't program them like a computer. Dog training and working with their dogs, it's all relationship. And so it's all about relationship. We have countless scores of people that will call us that, you know, they sent their dog or they want to send their dog to us, or maybe they sent their dog to somebody for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a month and it cost them thousands of dollars and it didn't do anything. And they think the trainer lied to them and so on and so forth. And a lot of times the trainer didn't lie to them. The trainer probably got the dog to do everything they want him to do, but it doesn't mean that it's going to transfer over to the people.
So is one of the mistakes that people make sending a dog to a trainer and expecting that that's going to do the trick?
Yeah, it's expecting that anybody's going to train your dog for you. It's, you know, when you bring this beautiful, wonderful, loving creature into your life, we've taken the responsibility for them. And so it's our responsibility to help them learn. It's, you can't expect anybody else. It's like sending your children away to have them trained or have them raised. You know, it's all about a relationship. And so anybody can teach, any good trainer worth their salt, they can get a dog to sit and down and stay and do all these things. But when you send the dog back home, the dog is, you know, they may stick with it for a little while, but if the people are not being consistent with their cues and how to respond to the dog, they're not going to do it.
Interesting. Let's jump back a minute to this notion that we need to understand how dogs communicate. Is it a complex system of communication tools, or is it relatively simple?
It's very simple, and all we need to do is take the time to understand it. So dogs learn very differently than we learn. You know, we learn through verbal language for the most part. We really rely very heavily on verbal language, even though we do rely a lot on body language, but we're not always aware of it. It's more of a subconscious thing. With dogs, their communication comes down to body language, eye contact, but most of all, they learn through trial and error and cause and effect. So they do something. They're looking for the response from their environment, which is usually us, and if they get a response to them that's favorable, then they're going to continue that behavior.
So, Brad, when we talk about a favorable response, and I'm sorry for interrupting, but
that's okay.
Are we talking about approval, a pat on the head, good dog, or are we talking about, for instance, using food to reward them?
It all depends on the dog. They're individual personalities. So some dogs are so fired up for a tennis ball, they're going to go crazy. We like to use multiple rewards. We don't generally like to use food in every single situation, because what we found over the years is that when you do that, the general public doesn't know how to fade off of a reward like that, and then their reward for the dog becomes inconsistent. Therefore, the dog's performance becomes inconsistent. So we like to use everything. So if we'll use their food in general, if their dogs are motivated for their food, then we have them sit and wait for their food. They get a reward there. If they just want, you know, my attention, we can have them do something to do that. If they love to get up on the furniture and they're allowed that, that can be a reward. Going out for a walk before they put their leash on, before they go out the door, anything in their life we use as a reward. So there's multiple things depending on the dog.
So when you talk about having to learn about how a dog communicates, are we having to study their body language as well?
Yeah, and it's not rocket science, so you don't have to get super, super deep into it. The biggest thing to understand is how they communicate, as we started to talk about a little bit earlier, is that they communicate, I was saying, by body language, trial and error, and cause and effect. So if we are teaching our dog something, we can't sit there. What happens a lot of times, we mentioned repetition, I think, earlier, and a lot of times we ask our dog to sit, or we have a brand new puppy, and we ask them to sit. Well, they don't know what the word sit means, so we just say sit, 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 sit. We say sit about 15 times, and they have no idea, and they're jumping at our legs while we're saying sit, and they don't know what it means. The proper time to say sit would be to wait for the dog to put themselves in a sit, and then we label that behavior. So we say sit, sit, sit once they're in the behavior. So we're labeling the action of what they're doing to that word. We match those two.
But they seem to learn to sit pretty quickly, quicker than other things. Why is that?
Yeah. You know, it's just a natural thing for them. That's a really natural thing. You can bring their head up. A lot of times they're looking up at us anyways, so it's more comfortable for them. Instead of straining their neck, it's more comfortable to put their bottom side down so they're looking straight up. It's a much easier position for them. So that's why it's a really simple thing to get them to do and then just to label. But the key is to allow your dogs the space to learn. And the thing that we try to stress all the time in our classes and in our seminars is that you've got to remember, they have absolutely no clue what we want. They don't know that sit means put my butt down, or down means lay down, and then I'm supposed to stay there. The only way they learn it is by us giving them the response. So let me give you a real quick example. Let's say somebody wants to teach their dog to sit and to hold their sit. Okay, or a lot of people, we don't even use the word stay, but you can say a sit stay. So we ask our dog to sit, they sit, and what happens is you start to back away from your dog. And then the dog gets up and follows you. So a lot of times we'll get mad at the dog and we bring them back in. They don't know they're not supposed to follow you. So if they're in the sit and you back away and they move towards you, we just move back into them, wait for them to sit back down again, As soon as they sit back down again, we engage, tell them how great they are, and we start moving away again. In which case, they might get up and follow us, and that might happen two or three times. But maybe by the third or fourth time, you're able to go 3 feet away from them because they've figured out that every time they've gotten up, you've brought them back, and oh, this is what they're looking for. So it's communicating through body language in your responses to them that they'll figure it out.
Fascinating. Tamara, dogs are by nature pack animals, yet many of us have just one dog in our home. We have just one dog in our home right now. So how does that pack mentality influence a dog's behavior?
You are a surrogate pack, so it might not be with furry in a furry pack anymore. You're actually part of a pack. Some dogs might take on, if they're born with certain skills and that makes them great leaders or followers, some dogs with very strong skills might try to become leader of the fleshy people in the pack. Some dogs will just be followers.
Okay, and is there a way that we as humans should relate to our pack animals, keeping in mind that this is a natural order of events for them or a natural behavior?
Yeah, depending on the personality and the traits of the dog is how I would work it. Not all I would. We don't hold strict. We have structure, but we don't hold every dog identical. So it's more individualized. With one dog in our house, I might have a little bit looser rules because he doesn't challenge me, much like my children. My protection trained canine might have tighter rules because of that particular dog is more likely to want to take charge if given the opportunity.
We should mention that you and Brad have two children, one cat, and five dogs in your home.
Actually down to four.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. For any particular reason, or did you lose one?
Yeah, no, Brad just wants us to lighten up the pack.
Lighten up the pack, or he wants a more elevated position in the pack, maybe?
Well, it's hard to go on trips and stuff like that. It's like having kids, you know. We have people come stay at our house. I don't like to send them away, and
sure,
I don't want them to be stressed. So it takes a lot of orchestration to go on a vacation or somewhere so that everyone's happy.
Tell me how it works when you offer your services of Team Canine in helping people.
When we go to someone's home, basically what we do is we analyze that particular family, the environment they're in, and the personality of their dog and what their expectations are. So we come up with an individualized plan that's more realistic, because a lot of times they might have unrealistic judgments for their dog. They might want things that this dog might not be able to do. So we want to kind of go in there, analyze, look at what's going on based on all these factors, and come up with the best plan for success.
Like anything else, is this a situation where people shouldn't even embark on dog training unless they're willing to commit time on a consistent basis to practice?
Absolutely.
How much
it
time?
It takes work.
How much time?
You know, it's kind of like, again, I'm going to relate to raising children. I didn't set aside an hour a day to train my kids. To me, working with children or working with my dogs, is every moment is a possible training moment.
Is there no point with dogs where they're pretty much trained and you can just kind of peacefully coexist?
You know, it depends on the dog. And some dogs, regardless of how much training and how old they are, it depends on their problem-solving skills. They might still try to challenge you every now and again. So you still that's the more clever dog they're going to see. Are you still the boss today? So you might have to have stricter rules with that particular dog. Some dogs, you might have that training, that relationship going, and they might never test you.
When a dog wags his or her tail, it could mean that they're happy, but it could mean something else as well, right?
Correct. Wagging the tail is just like humans smiling. Smiles can mean you're happy. Smiles can mean you're on the verge of crying. Smiles could be you're angry. We can hide behind those. Animals have the same thing in their body language. And we get this a lot, when, especially in dog bite cases, we'll get people saying, but his tail was wagging. Well, unfortunately, what was the rest of his body looking like? Was his body rigid? Was it soft and relaxed? What was his facial expression looking like? But unfortunately, get stuck on that tail. And tails could be happy. Tails could be upset. Tails could mean they're aroused and it's intense.
Very interesting. So you have to look at the totality.
Yes.
Are there any other particular body movements or body language that dogs exhibit that we can learn from?
Yeah, sometimes if you watch your dog when they're nice and relaxed, they might have a soft closed mouth. That means the muscles around the face are relaxed. Or their mouth is slightly opened and they have a nice equal breathing pattern. When a dog gets stressed or nervous or something happens, they might get more rigid in their face, their mouth might close, and under some higher stress levels, they might start doing some licking around the mouth. Sometimes they might look away. Another great example in vet's office is when dogs are stressed, they start yawning. It's not because they're tired. It's called a calming signal. They're trying to relieve the stress.
Very interesting. I certainly hadn't ever heard that. Brad, you have a book out now called Conversations with Courtney. Who's Courtney?
Courtney's my wonderful golden retriever.
Pictured on the cover of the book.
Yeah, and it's her.
And these are conversations that the two of you have had?
Possibly.
Tell us about the book.
The book is, it's been a dream in itself to make it, but, you know, what we found just through our training is that, just as we've been talking about here, is it's not about the dog. It's always about the people. And what we find in our training classes is we're always trying to explain things to everybody from the dog's point of view. And so what I thought would be great would be to put a book together where the dog actually becomes the trainer. And that's what's happened, you know, in this book. When people get into the book, you'll see it's a funny, witty story, but it really gives you a whole different understanding and an accurate understanding of how our dogs are perceiving us and how they're learning and how we're kind of messing things up all the time.
So she has, in fact, trained you?
Of course.
Okay. And I can see, or I can imagine, Tamara's nodding in the background.
Right? Well, no, she's shaking her head saying, no, I trained.
I trained. Okay. I want to direct people to your website. They can find out more at, is it teamcanine.com?
Yeah, it's teamcanine.com. Now, the book will be available there, but actually the book has a separate website right now, and it's actually just the name of the book, conversationswithcourtney.com.
And that's C-O-U-R-T-N-E-Y. Is it available on Amazon.com as well?
It is.
Excellent. Which is to say that good dog listeners can click on Smarter Shopping, which is at the top of the webpage, and it'll take you directly to a page where you can purchase Conversations with Courtney right there. Tamara and Brad Jaffe, thank you so much for being on the Good Dog Podcast today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.